Now, with that said, there must be something very serious in this text for him to say, love not the world, and if any man does love the world, then the love of the Father is not in him. I believe if something is that emphatic, I'd like to know what the world is, because I might be in love with it and I don't want to be. And if I'm in love with some part of it, I want to ask God by his grace to help me fall out of love. Because I do believe there is such a thing as falling out of love with the things of the world. As a pastor, I hear everything in the world, much of which I can't repeat. But I'll have sometimes a man say to me about his wife, or a wife say to me about her husband, Pastor, I still love them, but I'm not in love with them. There's a Greek word for that, hogwash. Because that's an absolute impossibility. But it is possible to be a child of God and love something that you're not supposed to love. All those sins in the New Testament letters that we are warned about, the Spirit of God was not warning us of those things we could not commit. He's warning us of those things we might get into. I happen to think that as a child of God, conceivably, you can commit any sin you committed when you were lost. You just can't commit it with the joy and ease and pleasure you did when the Spirit of God was not living inside of you. So with that stated, with a lot of we preachers talking about love, not the world, I want us to think about what the world might be. In fact, the Christian is to never possess a love for the world. And he gives really four reasons in the text why Christians should not love the world. And here they are. Number one, we ought not love the world because of what the world is. Now, I'm asking rhetorically, you don't have to respond publicly. I'm asking rhetorically, what is the world? Let me illustrate that. If you were watching the evening news, you might hear the anchor of that news program say, and now we'll turn to the world of weather. Now, he doesn't mean that's another planet. He means that's another system of thought that deals with a subject. He might say, now we get a word from the world of sports. Again, he's not talking about another planet. He's talking about another system of thought that deals with some area of subject that is a world kind of all its own. And when the Bible tells us that we should not love the world is an invisible spiritual system of values that is always anti-God and anti-holy. Everything that God ever established as truth, and by the way, God is the only one that can establish what's true. If your pastor and this pastor preaches until we turn nine colors and pass out, we will never make truth be truth. God does that. We are to declare God's truth, and anything that is in disagreement to God's truth is a lie. And out of that world that has opposed the world of what God has established as true, that world system that is anti-God and anti-holy, that type of world that will cause us to be diminished in our devotion to God and our love for God, that is the world that we are to be sensitive to and stay away from. Now, I've never been in more consternation because of wanting to do right myself and wanting to help God's people that I pastor do right than I am right now. And I want to put kind hands on what I'm about to say, because I've tried my best to stay out of the political arena, but it's something recently, and I'll just leave it be as vague as I can be, but it can happen, quite frankly. Somebody that's in the political arena that we appreciate their decisions, and they may even speak favorably of God. And maybe before the day is out, they use some word that ought not be used in the dark among sailors, but yet they just got through telling us that they love God. Now, before we throw all the stones at the politicians, it happens that way among people who call themselves the people of God who are members of our churches. I hear the women of the churches I go and the one I pastor use euphemisms for sex and other gutter subjects that would have never been used when I was growing up. We have become the most crude in our expressions of any time in my lifetime. So on the one hand, we pastors are warning you, don't love the world, but we are teaching you every day how to be crude. I noticed that as I aged, I would not be quite as crude in some of my preaching. Because the theory behind that is, because I embraced it and thought it was right when I embraced it, that these people live in the gutter Monday through Saturday, so I need to speak where they can understand the truth of God on Sunday. I don't deny all of that statement, but listen to me. When Peter had warmed himself at the fire of God's enemies, and the Bible tells us that he used an oath, I got a pretty good imagination what he said. But God did not feel like that was important enough to say it, because he thought any fool could figure out that if he used an oath, he used something he shouldn't have said. And it's not always necessary that I bear in its crudeness every expression that I hear and say, well, they go to church and they use it. I have staff members at my church that use it. I have my pastor that uses it. I'm trying to order my life in such a way that God is not grieved by what I say. And the best way to do that is to first put a guard on what you think. Words are the expressions of thoughts. And if you will remember that as a man thinks in his innermost being, that's what he is. Your words are the expression of what's coming out on the inside. And if you say sometime, well, I'm sorry I said that. I don't know where that came from. I know where it came from. Jesus said it came out of your heart. That's true with me and that's true with you. And he tells us, don't love the world because of what the world is. It is a system that is doing its best to oppose what God has established in hopes that you will ignore what God said and do what everybody else is doing around you. And folks, there is no hope of your success if you don't get a grip and think about your thought life is your business before a holy God, and nobody controls your thoughts but you, and you do control them. Don't be telling me you're not responsible for that. Yes, you are too. Nobody comes and puts a gun to your head and says, think ugly. You do it because ugliness is a part of that fallen man that is not yet all redeemed. You see, folks, when God saved me, the old evil nature was broken. I was divinely implanted by the Spirit of God, and the old nature has not been totally eradicated yet. There's parts of my life that are still not surrendered to the Lordship of Jesus Christ, and I am to give that attention, else I will let the things of the world strum my heart chords into that which is evil, into that which will diminish me, into that which will cause me to stumble and fall, deceive me, because the one that's behind the world system is Lucifer. He is a deceiver. He is your adversary. He does not want you living for God. He does not want you thinking like you ought to think. And that's why he tricks many a Baptist over their thought life in regards to the music they listen to. Now, I'm not going to go out in that too deep, but stay with me. If you listen to any kind of music that Jesus would be uncomfortable listening to the lyrics, you need to change your music. You know, there's a Roman, I haven't found this in the books yet, but there is a Roman philosopher named Seneca who is reported to have said, I'll let you write the laws of a land if you'll let me write the music. That's powerful. And there's not enough preaching that Mike Stone or any other preacher can do on Sunday that will combat if you're filling your heart with words and philosophies. For as Adrian Rogers, a preacher of the previous generation, taught us, the devil is not primarily a pusher of dope. He is a pusher of doctrine and philosophy, and he wants to monkey with your thought life. That's why the Bible is very plain to tell us that the weapons of our warfare aren't carnal, but they're mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, and he explains it. casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing every thought into the captivity of Jesus Christ. Your Christian life will be no stronger than your attention to your thought life. Every time. Well, not only is the world an invisible spiritual system, it's not the natural habitat for God's people. Listen to me. When you give yourself to what you heard tonight, your spiritual man can be strengthened. When you start listening to, and it doesn't have to be rock, it can be some of the sorry, sexy, carnal country and western. And when you listen to that, your spiritual man is diminished and weakened. And before you know it, the words of that song, whatever kind it was, is immaterial, will now take place in your thought life and attitude. And then you begin to look upon whatever that subject matter was. And before you know it, you're already committing the sin in here before you act it out with your body. It's not the system that is a natural habitat for God's people. Did you know Titus told us in chapter 2, or Paul said writing to Titus, that the grace of God that does bring salvation, and the grace of God is what brings salvation to everybody that's saved. Here's what it teaches us: to deny ungodliness and worldly lust, and live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. That is the admonition of a holy God to you and me. And on our best days, we're all more carnal than we think. Every morning I live, when I open my eyes, I don't say it out loud because most of the time I'm an early riser and my wife's asleep, and I don't need to wake her up with this, or she may wake up and give me some words. I say, "Dear God, thank you that I have come to the awareness that I'm alive this morning. You've let me rest through the night. Before I crawl out of this bed, I surrender my mind and my heart and whatever is in store this day to your sovereignty and your plan. But God, I will make a confession, Lord, that you know. I just want you to know I know it, Lord. More than what my enemy can do to me today is what I might do to me. And so I surrender to that lordship. Please set a guard about my mouth, my thought life, and my actions, that I might not do anything to embarrass you, embarrass my family, embarrass the church that I'm privileged to serve. Dear God, I need your help today. And all the previous days that I tried to live for God, not worth one dime for the new morning." Let me tell you something. There's a message in the Old Testament story of when the manna came daily and you couldn't save it. You can't live on yesterday's grace. You got to have it every day. And so you better learn that we are not to love the world because of what the world is. Number two, don't love the world because of what the world does to us. That's in verse 16. Worldliness becomes an attitude. Notice how he said this: for all that's in the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, is not of the Father but of the world. So worldliness becomes an attitude before it becomes an activity. I almost alluded and said those very words a moment ago. It's first in here before it becomes an activity. If you become worldly in your attitude or activity, here's what will happen. You will lose the enjoyment of the Father's love. You know what that's called? That's called your devotional life. And sometimes, folks, we think devotional life means that I read a verse of Scripture and said a prayer this morning. Folks, the overall devotional life is more than the prayer. And if you read Our Daily Bread or some other publication and you prayed, praise God for you. But your devotional life has to do with how devoted you are to a living Christ. As Paul said, who lives in me, the hope of glory. He lives in me. Christ in me, the hope of glory. And so you lose your enjoyment of the Father's love. You lose your devotional life. You find it hard to obey the Father's will. There's your conduct. You know why it's hard to do the Father's will? Because you lost your devotional life. You know how a man or woman steps out on their spouse? They lost their devotional life. They lost the closeness with their spouse. That's the way it is with the Lord. Worldliness, interestingly, in this text, I just read it. There's three traps he mentions. That's like a bear trap. Before you know it, you're caught. What are those traps? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's the way it worked with Eve, wasn't it? The Bible says about the lust of the flesh, the tree back over there was good for food. Man, I'd love to have that. Now, folks, I know what it means to like good food. I'm married to a good woman who flat knows how to cook. And you can tell I wear her goods, you know, around my midsection. And so the lust of the flesh, it was, oh, I'd love to have some of that. The lust of the eyes, it was pleasant. Boy, doesn't that look nice? My, look at that. It's pleasant to the eyes. I really want some of that. Look how pretty that is. And the pride of life, that fruit Eve saw was something that caused her desire to make her wise. Look what I have. Look what I got. Look what I've done. And folks, when you think about the word pride, it has a middle letter in it. I. I was just teasing my wife the other day. Sometimes I'll just meander with her a little bit. I said, Beth, I've come to the conclusion of the most used word in America today. And, of course, my kids have always said, Dad, we don't know when you're teasing and when you're not. And I said, I got you right where I want you. So my wife said, it sounds like you may be teasing. Are you teasing? I said, yeah, partly. But I think I'm telling the truth. She said, what do you think is the most used word in the American language today in America? I said, right. People can't make a sentence. Right? 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 Look at me. Look what I've done. It's about me, and it's about me being right. Now, you think about it. You know, we've always used crutches. We've always used verbal crutches in our language. But, folks, the truth of it is, it doesn't matter if I'm right. It matters, is God right in my life? And if he's not, the humbleness of heart should get off my mind. Is it something that's nice to look at? Is it good for food? And will it make me wise? Because after all, pride wants to be something. And we generally think we're something by what we own, by what we possess, by some honor that comes, by where we live or what we drive or some accolade that's laid down before us. Pride. Pride goes before a great fall. If you and I could defeat pride, we would not sin again. Now, I know you probably can't receive that at the moment, but you think about that. I can think of no sin that's not committed that is not tied to pride. You tell your friends off, or your wife off, or your husband off. I'll tell you, I give him a piece of my mind. Yeah, and you ran out of pieces too, didn't you? All about me. Lust of the flesh, what is that? Let's talk about lust. The most basic term for lust, or the most basic meaning, is desire. If I'm thirsty and I want a drink of water, I lust for water. It's not necessarily in that connotation anything wrong with it. Most anybody that's thirsty desires water. And so the text talks about lust of the flesh. That's anything that appeals to the fallen nature. And folks, we are propped up on our leaning side. Yeah. I am more prone, if a person has eight good qualities and two bad ones, I'm more prone to pick up on one of your bad ones and mimic that before I am the good qualities. That's just who we are. We're propped up on our leaning side. And so Paul made the statement when he wrote to Rome, the Christians at Rome in the 7th chapter, something that most of you could quote from memory. In me, he said, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. I'm going to see after me. And if I have to walk on you to do it and hurt you and hurt your family, I'll do it because old number one here. And folks, there's supposed to be a number one, but it's not supposed to be me. We call him L-O-R-D. And he made plain that in all things, now listen, he didn't say, in all things, I want to be your priority. That's one of the things killing the church. Jesus is one of our priorities. In all things, he said, he is to have preeminence. He's so far ahead of everything else. And if he ever becomes preeminent, the husband won't suffer, the wife won't suffer, the children won't suffer. Just name it. It won't suffer if he's preeminent. And so the lust of the flesh is that which will minister to my old carnal fallen nature. Lot of the Old Testament proves some of that. When we study his life, we find that he looked toward Sodom. Then the Bible says not only did he look that way, but he pitched his tent toward the well-watered plains over there. And what we find out happened to Lot last was he's captured by the enemy. And it all started just by looking. First pitched his tent. And if you pitch your tent toward Sodom, you got a flap on the door, and you're looking in a certain direction all the time. Can I ask you a question? What direction are you looking all the time? When you open your flap, which way are you looking? If God came, and I'm trying to be cute, and rapped on your flap, and you opened it, which direction are you looking? Because one of these days, he may rap on your flap like he has on mine on several occasions. And before you know it, you're not just looking that way, but you finally just absolutely pitch your tent in that direction. That means you become not just wanting to look that way. I think I'm going to position it so that this is convenient. It's amazing how many men get involved in things that's convenient, and they're just a half a step away from the enemy putting a meat hook in them. And they'd never get loose from it. But they'll come bawling and squalling to the pastor's office and say, Brother Mike, can you do something? I'm on the verge of losing everything I got financially, my testimony, my wife, my children. I had a man call me, remember it vividly, you don't forget these things. Probably 8 o'clock on a Saturday night it was. He said, man, I'm in serious trouble and I need to see you. Could you meet me at the office? I said, well, yes, sir, I will. So he said, here's the bottom line. He said, my wife has caught me over in Walmart parking lot in the truck with another woman. And he said, I'm about to lose it all. But you see, folks, his problem did not start in the pickup truck at Walmart. Now, I don't know that there was a phone call, but let's just suppose there was preceding that a phone call. His problem didn't start on a phone call. His problem started when it got right up here. He began to look toward the well-watered plains of Jordan. He just sort of, and then before it was over, he thought, that's nice. That scratches my itch. And so he gets his tent positioned that way. And then he ends up doing something. And most of the time when we hear that people we never dreamed would call it quits, hey, that's the sin that's conceived has brought forth death. And it's interesting in the study of that, and I don't have time to deal with that at this point, but when sin is conceived, when you study biology, what conception is, how the seed of a man goes and captures the egg of the woman, you've seen that many times in some biological program on television that was talking about conception, captures the egg like that and causes conception. That's the very picture in the Greek New Testament. It is. It captures you. And folks, when you walk out into the woods, you got every demon in hell helping you. And it's as far back out of the woods as it was in there. And on your way out, you got those same demons fighting you every step of the way. Serious stuff. Let me tell you about Lot. Peter recorded something about Lot that ought to cause us to chill. For that righteous man, speaking of Lot, dwelled among them in seeing and hearing. Y'all know what Lot saw and heard when he was looking toward Sodom, don't you? I don't need to rehearse that. Just put homosexuality and transgenderism and every perverse thing that you can think of. Here's what it says. He vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. You see, you can do what Lot did as a child of God, but you can't be happy in it. You just can't. We ought not love the world for a third reason, and that's in verses 12 through 14. That's because of what a Christian is. Notice he made that statement about fathers. He talked about fathers and young men and little children. Who are the fathers, you suppose? Well, you know who they are. They're the mature believers. They have the experience. They give guidance. They know the dangers. And we need among our fellowships those who are, and I'm not just talking about 70-year-old fathers. I'm talking about spiritual fathers. They've experienced a lot. They've both made their mistakes and they've made good decisions. And they know where the landmines are, and they will scream and shout and do all they can. Please don't go that way. That's the way I went, and it's horrible. We need those fathers. The young men are the conquerors. They've got strength and energy. The word works in them. They've overcome a good measure of their own immaturity, and they've become seasoned at warfare. Folks, we got a lot of folks in the church not even in the fight when it comes to warfare. Then he talked about little children. You know who a little child is, though still immature. They're still under the guidance of the teacher. You know what a little child needs? Nurture, opportunity to serve. We're having some fun days the last few days and the next few days. We have a 4-year-old granddaughter. She and her mother are visiting with us, and it's interesting. They're funny, and you laugh at them, and what they really need. They think this, but they're wrong because they're little and they need guidance. No different than you and I needed guidance. But there are also folks, as Paul used that, he wasn't talking about the 4-year-olds versus the 70-year-olds. He was talking about the spiritual fathers, the spiritual young men, and those who are still little children. One of the reasons Emmanuel Baptist Church and Mike Stone do what's being done here, we have a whole family of mature people, young people, little children. And as the family of God, we're trying to move them on. That's why sometimes we deal with tough subjects. That's why there are times that our hearts are broken to talk about what I'm talking about tonight. Because we have the war stories and we know the lives that were hurt so bad. And we know the little ones. And they need help. And sometimes in this generation, they're not getting it from what should be the very first place, their home. So we're trying to do something for mom and dad, and we're trying to do something for the little ones too, because there'll come a day that we'll stand before God. Did you do anything to help those mature? So we ought not love the world because of what the Christian really is. We've been born of the Spirit. In our most immature time, we still have the Spirit of God. When Jesus told Nicodemus, you must be born again, then we are born again by the Spirit, but we need a whole lot more after we are born again. Yeah. I want to say this with kindness toward my other preacher brethren, but you know, for a little bit, you could hear some preachers, if you'll just give your heart to Jesus, there will not be any more problems, and we will turn this place into the millennial reign of Christ. Not a bigger lie ever been told. Because everybody that's born again needs to grow in grace. And I can think of an old man in the room right now that still needs to grow in grace. And you're listening to him. Don't ever think that you've arrived. Paul said, I have not yet attained that for which I was apprehended. I've not apprehended that for which I've been apprehended. Well, the last thing I want to mention to you is, well, not love the world because of where the world is going. Verse 17. Did you know that value system that is set opposition to God? Do you know where it's going? Look at verse 17. And that world passes away. And all that lust of it does too. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever. So here's what we learn. That world system is passing away. It's very transitory. It's coming to an end. It is departing, and the worldly person lives for the pleasures of the flesh, is going to depart also. That person lives for what he can see. He lives for what I can experience right now. You know, through the years, I've taught a number of sessions of what we call the Men's Fraternity Program, written by Robert Lewis. And here was what it took to, here's what it, the definition of a man, if you ladies don't mind me saying this. A man rejects his passivity, because that's what happened in the fall. God called him to be a man and be a leader.
Yes, sir.
When the fall took place, he wants to be passive and she wants to wear the breeches.
Yep.
I'm not saying that to be funny.
Right.
But if he's going to be a real man, he's got to reject his passivity. He's got to accept his responsibility. He's got to lead courageously. But he expects not an immediate reward, a greater reward.
Right.
No farmer with good sense plants one morning, thinks the crop's up the next day. He does all that expecting a greater reward. I had a good pastor friend of mine one time. He left his church. I said, "What, if I may ask, and we're friends, I won't advertise this, but what'd you leave for?" He said, "Well, the people got to where they wouldn't follow me." I said, "Well, my soul, I wouldn't stay at Morningside 4 months." Folks, God didn't call us to get people to follow. He called us to invest our life in his. He gave his life for us. Now we give our lives for him to invest in hopes that they will see Christ in us and we can give them the same truth which sets captives free, because what we're giving them is not going to pass away, which is the other part of that verse. The world is passing away, but those who do God's will, those who will live for the joy and pleasure of God himself, and these unseen realities, you are aware, aren't you, that they're things, what we call in the heavenlies, realities of the spirit-filled life that cannot be seen with the naked eye, but they're more real than tangible things you can hold in your hand.
Yes.
Those are not going to pass away.
Right.
I've never seen a time when I thought more people was trying to sell gold. I saw a sign on a chiropractor's building a year or two ago. He was advertising his business, and he said, there were two major things in the economy then, or in the news, that was very popular. We do not buy gold, and we do not sell whatever it was at this time, and I got tickled. I think, yeah, you're the only people I know of in the world. Everybody else was trying to buy gold. But folks, can I tell you something? Gold's going to pass away. You're not going to keep it. One day we're going to walk on streets that's more pure than any gold you ever owned. But these unseen realities, we are living for God's approval. And Lord, if I can live one more day and pleasure you, one of these days I will have lived my final day, and God has an off-ramp. I don't know when it's going to be, but he numbered my days. And when my days are over, I'm out of here. Now I'm enjoying life. I'm enjoying Jesus. I'm enjoying the people of God. To quote a man that you guys would have known, who was preached for you several times, named Bill Sturm, he couldn't say the word born. He said the word barn. And one day we was talking about the glory of God and being in a service, and he said, "Man, I was barn for this." Folks, let me tell you something. I was barn to serve God. I happen to believe that everybody God saves, you were born to serve the Lord. And you wasn't supposed to give him 50% of your best. He didn't give 50% of his. He went all the way to a cross. And he suffered. And he bled. And he died. And Isaiah gave to us the understanding that the Father Jehovah laid on him the iniquity of us all. He took that. So tonight, going back to where I started, we want to love him. Perchance, if you push the flap back, what kind of love are you giving him? What's right beyond your flap? Is your heart intent pitched toward heaven and the things of God? Or is it pitched toward something else? Might not be a bad thing to just bow your head just a moment. Answer these questions, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Pastor. Did God put his finger on something that's in your life and you know and God knows? I can't serve God and keep that in my life. Pastor, I'm in love with something I shouldn't be in love with. I have too much affection for a given thing, maybe a given person. And so tonight, you want to say to the Lord, Lord, I don't want to keep loving some things to the degree I do. Help me to fall out of love with some things. And Lord, you know what they are. And give me grace to fall in love with Jesus more than I ever have before.